Now, wait a minute.
You need to start. You can't edit this out. You can't. The audience has to know you can't call it that. We're not going to tell you what it is. You can't call it that.
You absolutely can call it that. We encourage
you
it.
You can't call it. Kennedy, what's your view?
Brandon? My view is that a lot of people think elections are confusing, that they don't make sense. But I'm here today to tell you that elections don't have to be confusing at all. You see, it's all just made up of some wibbly-wobbly, votey-wody stuff. It'll make sense. It'll all make sense soon. I promise you. You're probably wondering, is Kennedy about to yell? Because I usually yell at the start of this show.
Can I yell?
I went to a concert last night. We're also recording this show very late. And I feel like I was just like trying to think, like, should I yell? And I had that feeling in my throat. Like, if I yell, I might not be able to record the rest of the show.
Can I yell instead?
Kennedy, no, you can't yell. Let me tell you something. The guns of democracy don't just rely on one person. Right now, more than ever, we should realize that when one of us falls,
You're too loud, Brandon. Your mic's not picking up on it.
Okay, everybody, let me handle this.
It's over. The bit is over. Let's just move on.
Audience, if you don't mind doing me a huge favor, please go out, put a vote on a ballot. Just go ahead and do that, please.
I think this time you should yell. We're struggling here on our end. I think you should yell.
We don't have enough voter power.
I was going to say, at a normal volume, it's the most important election of our lives.
This election, which will be, I do truly believe, the most important election of our lifetime.
This is the most important election of our lifetime.
This is the most important election, don't you? You hear that?
This is the most important election in our lifetime.
I certainly think it's the most important election of my lifetime.
This is the most important election of our times.
Politicians say every time, oh, this is the most important election. This one's really that important.
If you are in line to yell, stay in line.
Maybe the real election was the friends we met along the way.
It's the most important election of our lives. And we're here to vote once again. I'm just saying it at a regular volume, but you at home, yell it. Yell it right now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that. All right, great.
I'm an audience member. Vote!
It's time to vote. It's time to get in the polling booth once again. I'm super stoked to be here. We've got, as always, some folks that you'll recognize here on the panel. Some usual suspects. We've got Brandon Buchanan, who you've already heard. We've got our in-house statistician, Andrew Fields, providing a thin...
You could call me a standard deviant.
Providing a thin veneer of credibility to this show. And joining us at the polling place today, marching down to the polling booth for the first time, we've got Fox. Welcome to the show. Artist extraordinaire, poster to be seen, general internet cool person. Mox, what's up? How are you?
Doing all right. Thank you guys so much for having us, and, you know, just here to have a little fun and shoot the shit. Should be a good time.
I couldn't agree more. It's great to have you here. Mox, you know, something I want to get out of the way right away. Not everybody listens to the end of shows, unfortunately. So I like to give our guests a chance to let people know what they've got going on right here at the top of the show rather than wait. So, where should people find you? Give them the quick elevator pitch.
Yeah, I mean, we are at moxius.art on Blue Sky, and as of just this past week, it's artbymox.shop is the place to find all of our stuff, just because of some weird DNS issues. So, new URL for Pride Month, hooray.
Hooray!
Yay, the Democrat Socialist!
So proud to have a new URL.
Yeah, you gotta love a good anarchist with a .shop domain, but that's the way things go.
This is the way the cookie crumbles right there. Mox, you brought us the topic today. You were excited. I don't have a good transition for this at all because I'm not actually that familiar with Doctor Who.
Yeah, but this is a hard one. Like, we have to ask who would have a good transition. Maybe a doctor.
Ooh.
Which Mox is now. You're the doctor right now.
I think we can regenerate into a good transition.
That was much worse than no transition.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Way to go.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mox, what's special about Doctor Who? What made you want to talk about this today with us?
Aside from the fact that it's finally over.
Yeah.
Has your struggle come to an end, or are you still in the midst of it?
I mean, really hoping it's not over, but also really don't want it to keep going the way it just ended. So.
Oh, yes, I saw, and I've seen enough of those posts on the internet that are like, okay, for this fandom to understand what just happened to Doctor Who, describe something that would be completely awful if it happened in the other fandoms.
Exactly. I mean, it was a bad way to end this most recent season. We've been kicking around a bunch of ideas as to what to talk about, and then just, no, we have some shit we need to talk through.
Therapy! Podcast therapy!
This is now therapy. But, yeah, I mean, Doctor Who is probably one of our most favorite franchises on Earth. It is what we fall asleep listening to every single night, and just love it, and... You know, obviously the elephant in the room is just living life as a DID system, just having the concept of bigger on the inside in your brain and multiple versions of yourself, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of just speaks to you in a very special way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, I know that Doctor Who just stepped in it here with the end of the most recent season, so to speak. But also, I think a long-running kooky sci-fi series, speaking as somebody who watches a few long-running kooky sci-fi series, is the kind of thing that you just have to expect ups and downs in, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it'll never die, cut to it dead. But it's one of those things that is invincible, but it, if it survives the Chibnall years, it'll survive this, but it's not great. It's not great right now.
That's kind of my feeling. I think it'll make it.
I hate to be that guy, but when you said it's not invincible, what passed through my mind was the Invincible logo and that little sound. It's not the show's Invincible logo. Continue.
Yeah, it's not invincible. It's only run for a couple of seasons and will probably get canceled before it reaches a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, when it comes to like the long-running sci-fi series, it's not a matter of not reaching this final the satisfying conclusion due to, being cut short. It's just not knowing where you're going in any different direction at all until the entire concept of the conclusion is lost to you and you just want more in hopes that you'll find that magic again. See also Star Trek, or aside from Andor, everything going on in Star Wars right now.
Andor what?
Yep.
We talked about this franchise being not able to die. It has had extended hiatuses. Do we mean not die in the sense of it will exist in the hearts and minds of its fans? Or, is it okay if this show just isn't on for, 5 years?
It's okay if the show isn't on. I mean, it's not ideal, obviously, for the people that love it.
Yeah, it would be a bummer to have it go into another extended hiatus, because as of right now, it has still, since 2005, had at least one episode every year. Even during the dark times, one of the years, it technically straddled the line by having one on, New Year's Eve and then New Year's. So, technically.
Well, actually.
But they made it work.
That's awesome.
Somehow hit that deadline. So it would be a bummer if it was dead, but it may need to just go sit in the hole for a little while and really think about what it just did. Namely, Let's kill the first gay doctor during Pride Month and a surprise regeneration.
Very cool.
Oh my god, it came out of nowhere and wasn't even well written. Like, oh god, anyway.
You know what? At least they replaced him with a brand new character we've never seen in Doctor Who, right? Well, right?
Yeah, well, actually, we don't know, because usually, for those listening at home that don't follow Doctor Who, the Doctor regenerated into the body of a companion that he has had in the past. But usually in the credits, when someone regens into, you know, the Doctor, it says, and introducing insert actor here as the Doctor. But when, at the end of this most recent episode, Billy Piper pops out of the Doctor's body, and says, oh, hello, and just says, in introducing Billy Piper. But no, and as the Doctor, so we have no idea what the fuck she is or what's happening. The show might just be canceled, and that's just something we're going to have to live with.
Oh, hello, canceled.
The show's definitely canceled, but is it canceled? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Kennedy. Deep. Actually, really it took me a second. Yeah, it took me a second.
Let's expand on that.
So
zoom and enhance.
Complicated, long-running franchise that sometimes has cultural value. Sometimes, maybe, arguably, be detractive or appropriative of culture. We could say.
Mm-hmm. As with most long-running sci-fi series.
And currently is facing some of those tribulations. There's actually a lot of other things I could compare to this. So, you know, if I say there's something else in our world.
Okay, I'll say something as somebody who doesn't watch Doctor Who but knows just enough about it. The latest Doctor didn't even face off against a Dalek? What? Do you have a Doctor and not fight a Dalek?
Come on!
Yeah, like, how do you have a Doctor Who that
see one? Is the question?
But didn't even know
just kind
voice.
Of rewatching the last two series in our head right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm Doctor Who, and I don't even know what a Dalek is.
Like, don't think he even saw one. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, yeah, this most recent run had some bangers, but then did not bang. It has ceased to bang. And banging is important.
Yeah. Like, I've seen part of that one episode where they finally confront the fact that, yes, this Doctor is a black man, and yes, some people would rather die than be saved by a black man.
Yes, that was a very good episode. Or especially a very good ending. But, I mean, it was a pretty solid episode. That season started out super... And then found its stride, and we're like, yeah, you're doing it. This is great. Okay. And then it just shat the bed in its finale. It's like, okay. Well, you're bad at finales. That's fine. That's almost always been the case. Come back next season. Show us what you got. And they came back, and the season was doing really good. Had a couple of let's not say all-timers, but had a couple of really good ones. And then come to the finale, and who boy.
So.
Long series of question marks. So it's, you know, Doctor Who, long-standing tradition, has its ups and downs. So naturally, the other topic that we're going to be discussing today is museums and antiquities.
Ooh, goody.
Museums are these things that do have value to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a large extent to which the institution of museums is built on blood and suffering and stolen objects.
It absolutely is.
Nowhere is this more true than in Britain, a place where Doctor Who spends
most of its time. Yeah. It's kind of weird that you have this immortal space being, and he always just ends up in whatever the modern 20th century Britain is, or 21st, I guess now. Man,
like how a lot of monsters are drawn to New York City specifically. Like, Doctor Who specifically just really loves the UK because he is crazy, and this is the sign that he is insane.
Really loves good quarry in Cardiff. That's the biggest thing.
Sometimes Doctor Who is she, as we've established.
Yes.
You would really think, even if Doctor Who was willing to put up with England to some extent, like around the time of Brexit, Doctor Who would be like, well, I'm in France now.
They actually made a really funny reference to Brexit while it was happening in the show. where, like, there's the, in Doctor Who, like, the in-universe kind of UN secret organization, whatever, they're called UNIT. And during Brexit, like, this stretch of little episodes that happened then, the Doctor tries to get in contact with them, but is unable to because none of the phone lines there are connected anymore because it's run by the UN and Britain isn't there. It's like all tied into the UN and the EU and everything, and Britain is seceded, which was pretty. And yeah, and the Doctor's like, what? Where are you? What the hell? So, but yeah, no, let's talk about the British Museum and how much it fucking sucks.
Yeah, so, you know, the British Museum, as an institution, loves to pride itself on all these wonderful artifacts.
That they found on the ground.
No one was using
just them. Like an RPG character. Like, just like an RPG character, they went into some random houses, found some things in treasure chests, and like, this is mine now.
What is the world if not a giant loot drop?
Damn.
So, British Museum been around for... Since 1759. I didn't realize it was quite that old, but
it makes
sense.
I'm surprised it's that young. I mean,
it had to be before America was founded as a country. I was thinking more 1600s.
Yeah.
No, prior to this, most of these kind of artifacts were held by, like, Knights Templar type.
Sure.
Okay, yeah, you're good at history. We're thinking a little too modern.
I was surprised it's that old, just because the idea of displaying objects so that someone might enjoy them is sort of a newer concept.
I guess that's fair, but also in their case, it's bragging.
In European societies,
but like, it's bragging. Like, is it so they enjoy it, or so you can be like, look how great we are? Yeah,
it's bragging, and it's, you know, the concept of. You know, especially, I guess, yeah, in the 1700s, you're not going to ever go to Greece. You're too busy having cholera. So here, we brought some to you. But also, don't come in here. You're dirty.
I can't go to Greece. I just checked my schedule and I'll be too busy being sick.
Or that could also just be 2020.
Here's where it gets messy, though, right? In terms of, like, museums kind of fucked up, but they have this value. So, like, the British Museum, it really was founded from a relatively learning-oriented perspective, and in fact, primarily housed books and manuscripts at first. Like, it was more of a library at first. Early on, it was only for quote-unquote learned gentlemen, but slowly access did warm up over time. And in, like, the 1800s, it was much more, it became, like, in the early 1800s, it became, like, a lot more accessible. And so, like, I'm in no way justifying the existence of the British Museum, but I'm saying, like, museums as a whole, right, have this complicated legacy that, like, in some ways starts with this entity.
Oh, absolutely.
And so any museum that you've ever been to and valued, like, you have to think about this stuff a little bit. And like I say, even if you look into the history of it, look at the original founding principles of the British Museum. It doesn't sound that bad on paper.
No,
you know what I mean?
That is really true, especially I like lived in D.C. for a while. And one of the things you do when you are broke and living in D.C. is just hang out at museums because they're all free.
100%.
And there's, of course, like a lot of value there. There's a lot of just impressive stuff and impressive, you know, inspiring stuff. And especially if you're a kid and just, you know, like you go and it's just, wow, what is this? This makes me want to learn about insert thing, you know, whether it be some piece of antiquity, some piece of art, a big ass dinosaur skeleton, you know, whatever it may be. So that there, it's not one of those things that is easily like 100% evil or anything like that. It has a, like, the concept of museums, and especially like the bigger ones, have a lot of good in this world. They're also just soaked in blood. So it's something you just have to grapple with.
Yeah, I would be interested in hearing what everyone on the panel thinks about this to some extent, but I do think that there is, you know, like, I think about, like, my experiences both as a kid, which was obviously somewhat more profound, but even as an adult, going to museums and, you know, getting to see these ancient things or these special things, and even at something like a mineral museum, which is, it could in theory be like a little more ethical. It's like, well, some of these stones were pulled out of the ground using like, you know, unpaid forced labor or different, you know, like, you just have to like, kind of like think in your mind, like even in a place like that, it's like, how much of this can you trust to be ethical? Each individual museum, it varies so much. So I do believe that like getting to see these things can create wonder for learning and stuff like that, but I don't know. Like I'm personally conflicted on it, which is part of why I wanted to discuss it with everyone today. So before we move on to sillier topics, I actually kind of want to turn this more serious question around, just kind of ask everyone, how much value do you see in this stuff? Do you think it's relatively worth it? Do you think it's like, I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot and say you have to give some absolute answer here or anything like that, but just in your personal experience, like, do you feel like museums have been good for your life? Do you feel like they're maybe like good enough to like try to find some way to continue? Or do you feel like maybe they're a little overrated? Or where do you stand?
I think museums have a lot of value, which is part of the ethical issue, because we're taking, like the British Museum, but they're the big ones, but it happens all over. We're taking from other countries and making it our own, so only our own people can benefit from it. Like, I do think museums are very useful. Yeah, ethical, got it. We live in a society, got it. I still eat a lot of meat. I know I shouldn't, got it. There's a lot of things we can do. But, like, I think part of the issue is we're taking away the opportunity for people in their culture to learn more about that and giving it to the bigger countries.
Yeah. I mean, and not just learn about that, but also learn about themselves, right?
Yeah.
You have these situations, especially like, you know, we're talking about the British Museum a bunch, like the stuff they pulled out of sites like Angkor Wat and stuff like that, where you have people who don't even know their own history because someone went in and took it from them and brought it back to a big building that they'll never ever get to see in a country they'll never get to visit. Same thing goes for a lot of museums, like the Smithsonian in general, for instance, doing like in America, taking stuff from indigenous cultures and being like, ooh, look at this cool stuff. Come check it out. No, not you. You don't get to learn about yourself. Go away. But on the whole, yeah, the concept of museums is a great thing and it's really valuable. The question just comes down to, is there a way to do it ethically, and especially like with a, you know, some sort of fair exchange, right? Whether that be financial, monetary, whatever, or like, hey, we're going to learn about you. You want to learn about us?
Right. I think that's what's missing a lot is the opportunity for people to tell their own stories rather than have them be told for them in the museum exchange.
Exactly.
I'm not sure this conversation. I'm not sure this conversation will have the same relevance in 40 years or 50 years. It's cool for us to talk about history, but I'm not sure that future generations will even relate to history in the same way that we do. I think we're in a critical moment right now in human history that's irreplaceable, where scientific knowledge and cultural communication is like extremely important. It's better to have it than to not have it. And when we think about the things that could introduce equity into those situations, that a lot of those situations, we might have, what's the next paragraph of that situation? How is it implemented? And it's something that those real institutions, and remember that, of course, when we talk about the history of museums, that this isn't just a
like an ethnic monolith where, you know, museums and the idea of exploitation between cultures is not just between England and India, it's between India and itself. There are thousands and hundreds of cultures that are involved in the telling of history, and who is appointed as a national representative for like one gallery or museum or another have their own sectarian interests in like where art goes and how it's viewed, and it's very difficult to have like solutions that in the end are like extremely democratic and extremely just. Of course, there are targets that are just so egregious over history. You can look at almost any major museum of now in the United States for sure, and you can say, well, here are a raft of technical legalities that make it just obviously unethical. And you can look, I mean, especially, I won't name cities, but Orlando, Phoenix, Chicago, the Smithsonian, you can put any of those into Google and just type in museum scandal, and you'll hear stories of what's been stolen and from what country and from where. I guess the end of it is to say, and maybe this sounds like dissimulation, but it's not. It is what it is.
Fair enough.
That the cat is way out of the bag when it comes to what historical images are where, what people can see, what they even did. I think we're now in a situation where for the next 20 years, let's make sure that the next generation wants to see its history.
Yeah.
That's big job one for all of us right now.
History is behind us, and that's why we have to make sure it's ahead of us. I have no fucking clue what I just said. Let's get going.
Or you can just leave it all up to Silicon Valley. We'll feed pictures of it all into a...
No, bad thoughts. No, bad. Bad guest.
Tell us what happened.
I'm spraying you with a spray bottle. Bad guest.
Yeah, I want to move us on to funnier topics momentarily, but before I do, I just want to very quickly, Brandon had mentioned these kinds of statistics that you can find about this stuff. I just think it's sobering to hear this. The country that the British Museum, we're talking about like the obvious grayness, but like some things are good or bad. I think we can rule that this one thing in particular is fucking horrifying, which is that of the countries that the British Museum has taken artifacts from, they've taken the most from Iraq, and they have taken 164,000.
That's more than 163,000. Shit,
it's a lot.
I don't want us to dwell on that super long. I just think it's important. I think people don't really realize the scale of this stuff.
They're not stealing from them. They're reacquiring and reassessing.
They're protecting
it from yourself.
Yeah.
I want to redact it.
I feel like there's kind of an overlap here because like Doctor Who, much like museums, also has kind of an interesting cultural place where he, she, they, it sits.
It has an interesting cultural place and also an interesting pattern of, let's say, borrowing cultural pieces from other countries. Borrowing pieces of history to use as a jumping-off point.
Yes, there's
something they have gotten better at sometimes, or worse at others. But yeah, it is one of those things that, yeah, it is. Whenever kind of you're dealing with some sort of fiction that deals with going to the past, oh god, like you're gonna fuck up. You're gonna do something bad. There's landmines everywhere.
I think the best place for us to climb into the polling booth and get started with our votes today is with this crucial question, which is the TARDIS museum?
I mean, kinda. I guess there could be, because it's infinite, right? And there's been plenty of times where the doctor has come out holding a thing. It's like, where'd you get that? Oh, you know, Babylon in 2400 BC. And it's like, okay, how much other shit do you have back there, dog?
How much did Doctor Who steal?
Yeah, exactly. How, what
is this
there?
A villain from Tempest?
This is a conspiracy that we need to get to the bottom of.
This kind of harkens back to last week's episode where we were talking about how there's no excuse to be a broke vampire. Because if nothing else, you should be able to just, like, hoard a few random objects from one era and then sit on them. You know? Like, Doctor Who has that going for every incarnation of
its existence. A version of the Doctor that's just a long... Like, just, yeah, it just hodls. It's just, he's just an NFT investor. Uh-oh. Yeah.
No!
That, you've just this...
Kennedy, I can't do a... Kennedy, do me a favor. I can't do a British, good British accent. Be Doctor Who, yeah. Boarding NFTs.
Oi! NFT. There you go. That's all you get. Brandon, let's go.
Be the first people ever canceled by the British.
Honestly, phenomenal. Kennedy, maybe they shouldn't cancel Doctor Who after all. They may have a new showrunner. Kennedy, get out there and let him see your stuff. yeah, you can both write, direct.
Wait, you're not really British. You're not really British. You haven't said Bing Bong yet.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Bing Bong.
As far as the TARDIS goes, you know, anywhere can be a bathroom if you poop there. That's so true. I guess if you have enough old stuff, your car becomes a museum at some point.
All right, well then let me get more specific, I guess. Does the TARDIS provide communal cultural value in the manner of a museum?
It provides cultural value to the 8 or so people who are ever allowed to get in there.
That's my question.
It's a private museum. If it's a private museum, it's still a museum. If it provides immense cultural value to the 8 friends of the collector, doesn't that fit the requirements?
And you can't argue that they're segregationist or racist because there's been like
it does.
3 people of color allowed in, so it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's just regular nepotism. It's just regular old-fashioned favoritism.
What I'm getting,
you have to be,
the doctor's partner, are they always a woman? Or are they okay, so I have a chance. I have a chance to get on the TARDIS.
Yeah, in the modern era, it's almost always a 20-year-old woman.
Like, okay, but I have a chance to get on. Okay.
Yes, there was just a guy 2 guys ago.
Yeah.
There was a guy just two guys ago. Yeah.
The only time that's not true in the modern era. Well, I guess, okay, so during the 11th Doctor, you had Rory, who was the other companion's husband. Aside from tag-along husband, who was actually just fucking rad, I fucking love Rory, but it doesn't matter. Look, that's not Heath. When the Doctor was a woman, there were male companions.
Okay,
the only time
I see the implication.
In the modern era, exactly like precedents.
So if I go out right now before the next episode is released, I have a chance to be the new Doctor's companion. If I just take action right now.
Yeah, yes. you could balance the ticket, yes.
Yes! Let's go!
But, yeah, so as long as you are usually a 20-year-old British woman, you can get into this great museum. One at a time. Okay. Sometimes two. Sometimes too, and that's important.
And don't forget, the doctor gets the museum. You know, it's progressive. Sometimes you just progress is slow, everybody. Progress is slow. Sometimes you have to vote for 20 years to get it from one person to 2 people.
Her husband along.
Yeah, like progress is slow, people. Sometimes you have to vote for 20 years before you see any progress. Oh God, a liberal vampire bit me, and I'm a liberal now.
Goody.
Okay.
Here's my next question. Does the TARDIS/Doctor system adequately and correctly catalog, store, and preserve artifacts? Like, is this a trustworthy museum?
The doctor caused the eruption at Pompeii, canonically.
Isn't there such a thing? I consider that.
Okay, but that's outside the purview of the museum itself.
Well, I think it speaks to preserving cultural things.
Well, like, I'm sorry to talk over you, but, like, I'm frustrated. Listen. I would, like, oh, I'm applying for your government job. I'm top secret. I caused Pompeii. No, you're not getting the job. You caused Pompeii.
I actually am only giving the job to someone who caused Pompeii. If I'm interested in the commission of history, isn't there such a thing as firsthand sources? First, y'all are tearing down the exclusivity of this museum. Now you're kicking out all the people who experienced it. What would be cool?
Congratulations, Brandon. Making me anti-science now. Congratulations, Brandon. No, you made me anti-science.
Yeah, all right, fine. Just what will be cool? I left at the end of this segment. You guys, it seems like you're legislating all of the cool vibes out of the doctor's experience. If not for the ability to, you're going through all of the perks. You know, the ability to tell people that you've caused natural disasters and that they should respect and fear you. You're taking that away. You're taking the exclusive tickets.
You know what? You're right. Let's make the doctor. Let's change the constitution. Let's make the doctor the next president. That's the only way you could get something more appropriately, more chaotic than Trump. Let's change the constitution. Maybe.
Canonically, the doctor is actually the president of Earth in times of crisis.
No. Oh, okay. That's not so bad. That's not so bad.
Yeah.
That's okay. So I think I just think that we shouldn't let one or two little mistakes ruin a promising young doctor's life.
He's literally billions of years old.
That's so funny.
You know, I just want to say the people who went to high school with Doctor Who say that they were really nice and a really just quiet, unassuming person that you wouldn't expect to blow up a volcano.
I've heard that while Susan Collins was deeply concerned about the volcano, she ultimately voted for Doctor Who.
She's also, she was deeply concerned about the Billy Piper regeneration, but she still upvoted the last episode.
All right, I want to rapid fire through some of as rapid as we can, a couple of Doctor Who's personal beliefs. Where do we think Doctor Who would stand on a couple of issues?
With his feet.
That have never been addressed on the show as far as I know, at least directly. I mean, probably indirectly, and Mox, you'll be able to speak to that best, I'm sure. But
yeah, we have an encyclopedic knowledge of useless shit.
Yeah, perfect. Would Doctor Who condone or condemn the ritual use of ayahuasca in ceremonial settings?
Almost certain there's an episode where he gets high as shit on some sort of ritual thing. But yeah, no, he definitely blazes. Let's have some fun.
I feel like this one's a little bit of the softball of the three that I've got prepared. So, but does anyone else have a chime in on that? Do you think?
I mean, from what I know from Doctor Who, he blazes it 420 or whatever the local expression is.
We think Doctor Who's down with drugs. Probably is a legalize all drugs kind of character to some extent, maybe even.
Oh, he's absolutely a libertarian.
Yeah, libertarian vibes is definitely what I'm getting. Okay, cool. Now here's a slightly stickier one. Where do you think a good doctor stands on white dreadlocks?
Oh, hard against it. Gotta be. I mean, because if there's one thing that the doctor is, it's stylish. And that looks like ass. Right? We can all agree on that. So,
yeah. Like, I know how the doctors look, especially Doctor Four. Doctor Four with style.
You're just saying on pure style points, and I do agree. White dreadlocks always look horrifying, which is among the many reasons not to do it.
Actually, I guess what we really do need is a Ross Trent doctor.
You're saying we need a white dreadlocks doctor for representation.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's never been checked.
No, get me out of this. Get me out of this.
No, I'll say this. We're going to get that. Here's something I believe. You can name any ethnic or cultural category of person, and they will be a doctor first on the show before they have an Irish doctor. There will never be an Irish doctor as long as English people live and breathe and run that show.
It's true. They've had Scottish, both Scottish actors and Scottish actor being Scot or having a Scottish accent. But yeah, there's never going to be a Limey. There's never going to be... For a while, the doctor, every time he'd regenerate, would look at his hair and be bummed that he wasn't ginger. And yeah, that's pretty much speaking to exactly that, which is, no, you're never going to have a ginger doctor.
You're never going to have an Irish doctor. You're making a good case that Doctor Who would stand against white dreadlocks. Does anyone to have any strong case that
if you were to take a 20-year-old British woman and give them white dreadlocks, we're pretty sure Doctor Who would make fun of that white British woman, which means they'd probably make fun of anyone. So I think we're in the pro camp, the anti camp.
This is how you don't get in the TARDIS, is what I'm hearing.
Like I've seen a lot of the doctors, and yeah, like they tend to be stylish, especially number four, rocking that scarf. Like, yeah,
scarf is so good. That's the doctor we grew up on as a kid, like ditching school, yeah, or not ditching, but like, mom, I'm sick, I can't go to school today, and then just on PBS. Okay. Watching ancient episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I have a picture of the fourth Doctor now, and the Doctor knows stuff.
He fucks. Oh my god, does that man fuck.
That is the best scarf in human history. Doctor Who, the fourth Doctor, has the best scarf in human history.
Oh, no question. Like, there's so many just iconic fits. I could do a fucking doctoral dissertation.
What's this become? A doctor? A doctor? A professional in Doctor Who? Who could have possibly predicted that? Who was booed at the time, even though he was right?
Just that drip. Oh, God. And that's one of the things that sucked so much about this most recent episode. Was it?
Here's the trickiest one, though. Ready for this one? Very tricky. Does Doctor Who consider Puerto Rico colonized or decolonized?
Definitely colonized. Who's stance on
You really think? I mean, Doctor Who's stance on colonialism is a little sketchy sometimes.
There's always a wink and a nod towards, I don't like this, but you guys are going through your phase in history and I'm not allowed to get involved.
See, it's that not allowed to get involved part that feels a little like... I did write down a little note here that wasn't like a direct question, but something I felt I might just bring up, which is the fixed point in time excuse real, or is it just something that the doctor says when he's fucked up or when he just feels like there's no saving a situation, or he can't think of how to fix something?
It's absolute bullshit. Like, it's absolute, there are times when it's followed like gospel, and like, no, we gotta let that dude die. But then there's times when it's like, turns out the fixed point was wrong. What I've decided the fixed point is the fixed point. Actually, the eruption in Pompeii is a good example. That was a fixed point in time. You're not allowed to get involved and try to prevent or save anybody or anything like that. The eruption was a fixed point.
It's like Spider-Verse's canon events, looking like in the next movie we're going to find out that canon events were bullshit. Because there's a lot of hints.
There's a lot of hints, yeah. And, like, okay, yeah, so for when it came to Vesuvius, right? shows up and the volcano's going like a little wonky, and they're like, we cannot get involved and try to warn people to get out of here. They need to die. They need to fucking die. That's their job right now in history, is die from this volcano. Then as the episode goes on, you find out, like, no, the volcano is not supposed to erupt. And then the doctor's like, I gotta make this thing erupt.
Are we sure we're forgiving this?
The I'm doctor forgiving is... it, because it's great storytelling.
It's I also think all of you have just been just way too hard on the doctor here. You know, just doing a little, you blow up a little volcano once in a while. That's just part of the business. You know, canon events, I mean, if you have anything that involves time travel, you don't want to go back and fix everything. What kind of TV show would that be? You know, for three Spider-Man movies, maybe it's okay to admit that canon events are bullshit, but once you've opened up the museum, once you've taken out all the stuff from the TARDIS and delivered it back to their appropriate parts in time, now you're going back and you're fixing all of the mistakes of time. You're basically like, where is the fun? How much fun is going to be allowed to have for this cosmic traveler? Sometimes you gotta blow up a volcano.
I've just been on the line with Republican Lisa Murkowski, and even though she's also been worried about Doctor Who, she's still voting for him, so I'm going to have to go for him.
Come on, there you go. That's how it goes. Yeah, the funny thing, I mean, kind of speaking to that, the funny thing that sometimes gets brought up by fans is like, hey, it would stop being problematic by just getting more shit in the future, right? But if you are going, like, canonically, right, you're putting yourself in this universe. Like, okay, set more things in the future on different planets. You're still fucking up their history.
Like, okay, you know what?
On this planet that you just landed in, it just fucked their shit up.
Okay, I know what redeems Doctor Who. I know the one thing we can always bring up when we try to bring up his wrongdoings. I know the one thing we can bring up every time we're like, he did this. We could be like, oh, he's redeemed. He did this. It was when he brought Van Gogh into present time to find out how much of an impact his paintings actually made. Every time you bring something up bad up about him, oh, remember that time he brought Van Gogh to present time to realize that he actually made a huge impact?
Yeah, seriously, that is such a beautiful episode. And, like, as someone who lives with severe mental illness, like, oh my god, that episode's made us cry so many times. That is such a good episode.
So you know what? Every crime Doctor Who has committed is forgiven by me because of that one time he brought Van Gogh to present time to realize that his life would make a huge.
Free pass.
All right. Fine. Okay. So we're forgiving. We're giving Doctor Who sort of a pass for being a little shit about history. But let's talk about some of the potential consequences if Doctor Who was to be real in our real world.
Actually, one more thing when it comes to the Doctor and museums. Canonically, his last job at the end of his timeline, canonically, mm-hmm. the last thing he is the curator of the museum.
Dang.
Like, the British Museum is his TARDIS.
What if...
Wow.
What if Hillary Clinton was supposed to win in 2016, Doctor Who messed with it and was just like, oh, that's a canon event?
Yeah, that actually would be a very good episode. Like, no, Trump needs to win. Like, it's a canon event. It's not Trump winning. It's a fixed point in time.
We need to make a season of Doctor Who that is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia about horrifying fixed points in time that the doctor can't change. It's just every single one is just the doctor being like, hey, I could probably stop this volcano from blowing up, and then it's like, gang blows up a volcano.
Yeah, you can do it. Just the doctor poking in at random things, being like, no, this is canon. Sorry, I'm not gonna save your ass. No, you could have a lot of fun with that. That would be a fun, like, that actually would be a pretty fun animated web short, just like 5-minute episodes of just the Doctor showing up at various points in history with people crying out for help and saying no.
Sorry, I can't stop the Great Depression.
Actually, the Doctor did stop the Great Depression. The Doctor was there during the building of the Empire State Building and prevented the Daleks from taking over America during the Great Depression.
Well, I guess I'm just a scrub.
Again, we know way too much about this stupid show. And what's funny is the choice of mental illness is you could have had us on about other topics. And we would have been just as knowledgeable.
So, Doctor Who's revealed to be real.
Mm-hmm. They actually kind of did that this last season, but continue.
In our special timeline here, though, he's going to live in America.
Sure.
Okay.
He nearly did that in the 80s.
Do Republicans embrace the Doctor because he's basically like the libertarian ideal? Or do they ostracize him, her, they, it for being extremely trans?
It's going to depend a lot on what he looks like at the time.
Brandon, tell us your secret.
It's going to depend 100% on what color his skin is and what's between his legs or their legs.
It absolutely will not. Republicans hate the libertarian ideal. The Doctor will be an absolute enemy no matter what.
Good take.
Maybe we just need a compromise with the Doctor. If the Democrats just compromise, compromise.
They will definitely hate the Doctor for who they are. The idea, first of all, even the phrase doctor will get a negative response in the Republican world.
You're true. In line. You're right.
Doctor, an education. Do you think you're better than me? And knowing this
doctor,
character,
like
yes,
Dr.
they do. There's no
Doctor
way.
Doctor Who is really more of a really? Dr. Oz.
The doctor
no, that. But they wouldn't say that. Dr. Oz loves to pretend to be a fake doctor. Doctor Who, I think, takes their title with more credibility than any conservative would want from a fake doctor.
I just want to say, everybody says Doctor Who, but nobody ever says Doctor Why.
Wow. Nobody ever asks Doctor how you do.
Exactly. I actually think I think Russell Davies is Doctor How You Doing.
It's absolutely true. Their entire series is about that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, Russell T. Davies has been asking Doctor how you doing for the last their entire run.
The last 20 years of Doctor Who has been entirely based around someone coping with severe PTSD from war.
Very cool.
are you winning, Doctor?
Yeah. It's actually kind of true. It's been their most defining characteristic is, though they kind of dropped it for a little while, but it was kind of, you had the various, each incarnation kind of playing a different version of the phases of grief, like, kind of as you went on. But yeah, no one asks how you doing until last year.
It's tough. It's tough being an immortal Time Lord. Even though the Republican Party doesn't embrace the Doctor, the Doctor and Donald Trump strike a deal at some point, but for fixed point in time reasons.
It's a canon event.
The Doctor actually has referred to the Doctor has quite in canon referred to Donald Trump as an inevitability.
I do not need that fact in my head.
Because, the Doctor has referred to Donald Trump as a fixed point in time.
The doctor feels old Donnie's inevitable. And for whatever reason, don't worry about why, let's not debate that part.
Beat his former self.
For whatever reason, the Doctor agrees to let Donald Trump travel back in time.
No, absolutely.
Is there any era Donald Trump could travel to?
Yeah,
he would be as successful or more successful than now? Because I kind of feel like in some ways he's kind of like a uniquely 2025 America thing.
I actually think is he going back with any money?
Yeah, and he has the knowledge of history, so he can go back and like immediately, in the same way that the Doctor could instantly be rich.
Some quick gambling.
Yeah.
Time travel.
If we, if we isekai Trump to the 20s, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, like, I think Trump would find his way when America was just a colony and not a country, because, like, all that crazy nonsense Trump says about tariffs, about basically pushing everybody away, about winning, that was the way we saw economics back then. That is the way the UK, Britain, England treated economics. So, like, he was in tune. And as long as he had the money to succeed in the first place, he'd find his way.
Find his way to leadership of various things. The thing about Trump is, like, you look back at the great, horrible people in history, right? You have people like, you know, Hitler, Mussolini, or whatever. And their biggest thing is this is a bad thing to say out loud, but it's true. Like, they had riz, right? Their entire being was based around being, the most charismatic person and yelling loudest and talking and they had the riz. Trump only has the riz on Twitter.
That's a good point.
Without Twitter, without typing in all caps, yelling at Twitter, like, when you listen to him talk, like,
yeah, because, like, for several decades he was the biggest joke. Like, the Apprentice,
Donald Trump has had an editor and ghostwriter for most of his career. There's no reason to think that he wouldn't find someone to find the same role as Mark Burnett or the guy that wrote The Art of the Deal. There's not some 20s version of that guy who sees Trump. Nobody's going to like the cut of his jib in all of American history until now. I don't know if that's true.
They'll like the cut of his jib, but he won't be able to give, like, the speeches, right? Like, he won't be able to stand up there and... personally believe, like, his inspiring the
people. All he's got to do is stop saying Mexican and start saying Irish. He'll get acquainted with the old-timey racism of American history real quick.
And, like, when I'm
Yes, in tweet form,
but I definitely
don't think he can do that in, like, if you don't have people primed in knowing what he's about by, you know, his tweets and all the incendiary shit he said online in the lead up to his becoming God Emperor of the planet. If you listen to him talk, he doesn't have the same riz as the great horrible people in history. He doesn't talk with the same amount of force. He doesn't have the cadence, the rhythm, the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba that the great horrible people have. He has it in all caps, 140 characters. And if
I've got a hot ass take here. I think you're right to some extent, Mox. I think that Donald Trump excels at kind of speaking between the lines. Like, I've said this for a long time, that, like, his real talent, you know, he kind of, like, trails off sentences in this way that people often mistake for him, like, losing his train of thought. But it's like, no, he wants you to fill in the end of the sentence so he doesn't have to say the terrible thing. And so, I actually think with his kind of, like, way that he's very delicate about dancing around sensitive topics, and things like that, while obviously being a piece of shit, acting very, like, pious and like, oh yes, I'm the greatest gentleman. I think Donald Trump would actually, now that I'm thinking about this more, would just slay during the East India Trading Company's peak.
Yes, that's what I'm
on the board.
If
of
his East power India is based Company. Around the written word, yeah. If his power is, like, if all of he has to do is convince people via the written word, he can do it forcefully and get people to listen. But in terms of his oratory, whatever, like, you think about, like, Hitler or Mussolini or whatever.
I know we all hate Donald Trump, but he has a type of forceful charisma that does also work in person, and we have enough proof of this. Like, does it work on everyone? No. Would it work on, like, any one of us in this room? No. It's like a personality type that would repel all of us, right? But like to the types of sycophants that he's recruiting, the Stephen Millers of the world, the way that Donald Trump acts is appealing.
Absolutely. He's definitely appealing. Kind of what we're getting at is, would he have that appeal if he didn't have social media? Because he was a joke, right? For a while, like we were talking about, he was written off, he was forgotten, he was a joke.
And but also we had like TV, we had other stuff that that they didn't have centuries ago.
Yeah, so it's like, would, if the only way he could get people to listen to him and follow him, if the only way he could do that is by voice and in person, right, whether it be a stadium or just talking to a person, don't think he can do it. Like, he'd have some form of fucking, you know, he'd be in control of something and be rich probably because he's smarmy and could pull that off. But he doesn't have the standing at a podium and yelling and bop, 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 you know, like demanding your attention. He can do that in all caps in 140 characters. And that's how he got everybody's attention, so that when he went in front of them, they were already sycophants.
So he could be successful, but not as successful.
Not as successful, yeah, without being able to prime people to be sycophantic with, you know, with what he did on social media for 15 years and, you know, getting people excited. I don't know if he could do it. Just, like, if you drop him into 1930, you know, if you drop him in and be like, yo, go take over the world. I don't think he could pull that off. Like, he'd be a swarmy businessman and be good and whatever, but he would be a person, like, he would bankroll a Hitler. He wouldn't be a Hitler. You know,
so all I'm thinking about when you say that is FDR did the closest thing a politician could do to Twitter at the time and do the fireside chats. Mm-hmm. So all I'm imagining are the Trump fireside chats to counter just FDR and to point to say he's a fraud. The anti-FDR fireside
chats. They start at 3 a.m.
Andrew, we actually had that in real life, and it was Father Coughlin, and he was not so dissimilar to Donald Trump in terms of his speaking, which is why I think Trump works as a speaker almost any time in American history.
Okay, I am Googling Father
Coughlin. And you can all just look up, you can all Google Father Coughlin and just look at the
rhetoric. Yeah, I have Charles Coughlin up right now. This is beautiful. I love it when I say bullshit horrible, and it ends up being reality.
Person.
I'm being swayed to think Donald Trump probably could make it in the era of radio. But let's move on because I've got a really good one that I think everyone will enjoy a lot here. So Doctor Who has been revealed to be real, as we've mentioned. This is, of course, really good, extremely good for the profile of one man in particular, Ancient Aliens guy, who is now going to be a credible high-level scientific figure after the reveal of Doctor Who.
Damn it, this is how science works.
You're a crackpot until they find something, and if Doctor Who was revealed to be real, then all of his bullshit would actually, unfortunately, probably make sense.
Like, that's how the whole Trojan horse thing was. They thought it was all bullshit until one historian found proof, and they were like, okay, so the Trojan horse was real.
The city of Troy was real. They thought the city of Troy was a myth.
Troy was thought to be a myth for a long time. That's right. So Ancient Aliens guy, now a credible figure in the scientific community. What's the highest political office he can now hold since Doctor Who has made him credible? Like, do you think that this guy could go all the way? Do you think we could have Ancient Aliens man for president, or do you think he's gonna fall short somewhere? Maybe
I'm
he can only
going
be in the
for
cabinet or something.
Cabinet or elected position. My default is often going to be the House of Representatives.
Yeah, he could be a crackpot congressperson for sure. So, yeah, Secretary of for him. Yeah, that's
I feel like we could be that
listen,
now.
Listen, Mr. Kennedy, name one bad person Trump put on the cabinet. Name one unqualified person. Name one. Name one unqualified person in Congress.
I just
name
love the idea of the ancient aliens guy stepping out of the SUV and you just hearing, vindicated, I am selfish. I love it.
What bills would he propose?
Oh my god, he would propose the most insane bills you've ever heard of.
It's definitely expanding Space Force, but the question in this hypothetical is, yes, he's been proven that aliens definitely exist, but does Doctor Who existing in any way prove, like, they built the pyramid? Right? Like, so how much vindication does this dude really get?
I mean, I would argue the entire premise of Doctor Who is that this alien guy has been suddenly influencing all of human history and development the entire time.
Subtly, yeah, but he's not bringing, like, tech to build pyramids, right? And he's not going around to various... he's not acting as the...
You're answering my question. This is what the aliens guy would do. He would use all of his political energy to get Doctor Who to tell the truth, even if it didn't happen, to tell the truth about the pyramids. That is what he would use all of his political energy on.
Very fun, like, or not fun, dark hypothetical you could walk down of Doctor Who being that, Doctor Who's knowledge being that society that all of, like, pretty much modern racist cultist shit comes from, of just trying to return to that pure, like, he could be that civilization just living in his mind of, like, oh no, he's the reason that pyramids were built in all of these different situations or all of these isolated cultures, because they all interacted with him, and clearly he brought the concept of triangles. And he is the reason various blah, 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 that all that Aryan nonsense is built around. And by Aryan, I mean, like, the ancient Aryan race. Yeah. But yeah, I guess Doctor Who could be, if brought into the modern world and some was...
He could be
Atlantis, yeah. I guess. He could be, like, that ancient civilization that they're all fucking chasing.
Wow, yeah, this is a lot to process. I just want to say, I think we've come up with another great direction for a new Doctor Who season, which is a Doctor Who season where the Doctor does nothing but confirm ancient aliens theories. Like goes back to Egypt and is like, and the Doctor in this season needs to be, like, super crackpot. And like obviously on hard drugs all the time. And you know, just shows up in Egypt and is like, all right, we're gonna build a power station shaped like a big triangle.
Dr. Who is the one who dropped the Baghdad batteries, right? Like, in this situation, in this hypothetical.
We don't want future generations to know we were generating power here. Doctor Who drops off some spacesuits in South America.
I mean, it's all a cracked mirror, especially when you get into, like, the multiversal shit. It's what do we do with a character that knows, sees, and can experience everything simultaneously because of time travel and shit like that?
Are you saying there's a plot hole in Doctor Who?
I mean, kind of the problem that we run into, and kind of that all of this circles back to, is... whenever you are dealing with time travel and or multiversal shit, when we're talking about, like, canon events, right? You have already written yourself into a corner just by the nature of it. It's impossible to do correctly it's impossible to do in a way that's not going to fuck you somewhere. Especially if you're a series that is, I mean, just crossed its 60th.
I think the way to solve this would be to Americanize Doctor Who. Doctor Who needs to come to America, as I've been saying. So I've got a couple of final questions about Doctor Who in America, and then we can wrap this up, finish up these votes, and get out of here. My final question's about American Doctor Who. First, What president, what of all the U.S. presidents that have ever existed, which one would Doctor Who pick as a companion?
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton travels through time. Final vote. Final
Clinton vote. Would be a good one. He would be, they'd get into a lot of fun. He did have a lot of fun with Nixon when they hung out.
Roosevelt's no fun.
No. He would have a lot of fun with Roosevelt, actually. Because dinosaurs on a spaceship. There's an episode where Doctor, one of his best friends, is a big game hunter from those days.
The more that I... Go ahead. Well,
go ahead. Go ahead, Brandon.
I think the more we think about it, not to bring us too off topic, but the more that we realize... Bill Clinton would have really loved this shit. Everything that we've described this entire hour is all, we're in the Bill Clinton sweet zone. He would probably be the doctor's, like, best friend. If you wanted a male-male team, Bill Clinton and the doctor is
quite... Clinton.
Because much like doctor's companions, you know, they all have this quality of... They all have to have an enthusiastic love for these antics. And Bill Clinton fits that template of personality to a T.
Yeah, it's got to be young Clinton before he learned even a single lesson. Right? It's got to be college age.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Unmarried, for sure.
Fucking his way through the entire galaxy. It would be fantastic. I would watch that show. 100% watch that show. You give 26-year-old Bill Clinton a time machine. I would just... Time machine and just a production crew. Just follow that dude.
I think there would be one episode of American Doctor Who where he would have that.
Yeah.
My final question to round out our evening here. Thank you so much. For voting along with us here tonight, everyone. This will be our last question of the night. What is the American Doctor Who's TARDIS? You know, this police box thing is very quintessentially Bing Bong
1950s
land stuff.
It's a 1950s diner. Huh?
It's just an entire 1950s diner.
Which is canonically a thing the TARDIS has been. And it is 100% a 1950s diner because it blends in kind of everywhere. You can, like, not well, but, like, if you're walking down the street in modern day and there's, like, a 1950s diner on the corner, you're like, all right, and you just keep walking. You might go in for a quick cup, but mostly you just keep walking. Well, that's what what do they call it? Distortion field? No. Is it a distortion field? It's forgettable. Yeah, like same that. Way that I guess it's bigger than a police box. It is harder to ignore. Maybe it's like a nice car. Like maybe it's a. You know, kind of like like one of the cars you see driving around Havana, right? Just like just an old classic Studebaker. Yeah. Or just a sweet up Trans Am. Like just a really sweet up Trans Am.
I was gonna say it's a non-running 80s Chevy Nova on cinder blocks.
A sweet Trans Am is a good choice. I had briefly considered the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, just for sheer iconicness.
Seriously, so good.
But I also think that in terms of the thing that the Doctor would actually use in America, an ice cream truck.
Yeah, ice cream truck's good.
It fits. It's extremely.
Yeah, it would be okay. You know what? I still want the Doctor Who diner.
You've got the Doctor and Bill Clinton in an ice cream truck in the late 70s.
What kind of ice cream is Burl?
They sell the kind of ice cream. They sell the kind of ice cream you should only eat one bar of at a time.
Yeah. There might be this ice cream is legal in the future. Don't worry. They're not
selling ice cream. They're selling them. They're selling the idea of fun to whoever the kid's babysitter is.
I've got many questions. They'll all be
answered next time on Dragon
Ball. And this is where you end the show. The next episode of One Piece.
Doctor Who is one of those franchises that, of course, we could probably come back to it once a month and do exactly this much level of shit talking.
I mean, we could talk about it all day, every day. This and the current incarnation of the Monsterverse. Oh my god, we could just talk about it all day.
Wait a second, Doctor. Who are we talking about? Editor, feel free to add what sound effects you want to that.
Are you sure?
The editor grinding their teeth in agony. I'd love to see Mox when and if you come back. Let's just talk about who'd get elected president of Hollow Earth, or some various Godzilla and Kong team up. That should be a blast.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
The Monsterverse is so bad shit. It's so good. I want to talk about it. Give me a platform. Oh my god.
Well, talk to us in the future. We are not against getting guests to come.
We're totally fine to have a guest come back. And so.
all we've wanted in life is to be a friend of the pod.
Well, you already are.
From a young age. From a young age.
It's a good goal to have.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
This has been a blast. Mox, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
Thanks for having us.
This has been a really interesting episode, learning about Doctor Who, way that Doctor Who intersects with our culture. Thank you, everyone who listens along at home, for voting along with us. Mox, really fast, but once again, drop the links and reminder of where to find you for the people who did listen all the way to the end.
Oh, thank you for listening, everyone. We are moxiest.art on Blue Sky, and you can hit our gallery and our shop and everything at artbymox.shop.
Oh yeah, and as always, you can vote for us on all your favorite podcast services. Vote 5 stars every time, all the time. Vote as often as you can.
Cheat.
Bye bye.
Thanks for listening.